I hope you all got rest. And feel ready to engage. This morning in the instruction period, this period each day will offer guidance, reflections on practicing. This morning will be a little more extensive than it will be on subsequent mornings to kind of orient you to this style of practice. Many of you have been practicing for quite some time. And so there is a kind of a sense of why, for many of us, why we do this. But just as a reminder, the purpose of our practice is to establish a kind of mindfulness, a kind of awareness that supports us in learning about our minds, to understand the ways that our minds participate in how we struggle, where there's stress, suffering. And to create the conditions for wisdom to grow, to develop, that helps our minds reorient from our habitual ways of participating, our usual ways of wanting to hold on to what's pleasant, wanting to get rid of what's unpleasant, wanting to navigate the world based on our beliefs about what will make us happy without much evidence that they're actually correct beliefs. We have so many habitual tendencies that operate often in our subconscious level, the subconscious level of our experience. When they're not seen with awareness, when they're not recognized that they're happening, they are kind of running the show. And so the awareness that we're cultivating begins to reveal those tendencies, reveal those habits, those patterns of mind. And the very witnessing and seeing of them begins to help our system, our organism, to make different choices, to reorient towards something else. The wisdom that the Buddha pointed to around suffering is so counterintuitive. We think we'll find happiness by getting what we want, getting rid of what we don't want. And we don't think of looking at the wanting itself. And this is what the Buddha found in his own journey. The wanting is what leads us right into suffering, right into stress, right into struggle. And so it turns our kind of usual way of thinking we'll find happiness on its head. You mean I can find happiness by having wanting release? And so our practice begins to create the conditions for us to be curious about our experience, having this view, the view, the wise view of what actually leads us to stress and suffering. We cultivate the awareness that begins to be curious about looking at this. So our job in the practice isn't trying to do the understanding, trying to tell ourselves I shouldn't want, just to try to stop wanting. That doesn't usually work very well. That's another wanting. Wanting to stop wanting. And our job is to create the conditions that support this kind of learning. And this learning happens as we begin to investigate, be curious about our experience as human experience. To be curious about what is actually happening in my heart, in my body, in my mind. And how does it affect the unfolding of experience, the lawful unfolding that Nisha spoke about last night? So all forms of meditation that have come from the Buddha's lineage, many different forms of meditation, have this direction in mind. And there are many different ways to practice that open us to the development of this wisdom. Here in this practice that we'll be offering on this retreat, it's primarily a receptive practice. Rather than directing the attention, choosing what to pay attention to, we kind of settle back and just begin to get familiar with what our bodies, our hearts, our minds are doing each moment. So we open to all aspects of our experience, body, mind, heart, physical sensations, emotions, feelings, thoughts. We open to all of it. And as a kind of a way towards uncovering, we could say, uncovering the tendencies of our mind to stay engaged with our habitual habits and patterns around wanting and not wanting. From time to time, we also check in, what's the relationship with experience? So the practice that we're offering, learned from Saito Utejaniya. It's pretty simple in terms of the instructions, just to kind of summarize them. We remember this view, this perspective of why we're paying attention, why we're looking at experience. We recognize awareness and we open to what's obvious. And be curious. From time to time, checking in, how am I in relationship to what's happening? And I found it helpful to give a little more elaboration than that in terms of the instructions to support you in exploring experience in this way. I mentioned these last night, these pieces. Relax to begin with. Relax. Recognize that you are aware. Notice what is obvious, what awareness is aware of. And from time to time, check the relationship. So relaxation. Sayadaw emphasized this so much. At least to me, he emphasized it so much. I think in general, he writes about it in some of his books. The emphasis on relaxation is a support for this kind of very simple practice that we're doing. When the mind relaxes, when the body relaxes, the mind can relax. And when the mind relaxes, when the mind is not caught in worries, concerns, thoughts about past or future, quite naturally what it's doing is noticing what's here. That's kind of what it's really good at doing. And so we don't actually have to, it's almost like we don't have to do the mindfulness. We kind of let go of what's keeping us from that, keeping that from just naturally happening. We explore that possibility. Relaxation is a great way to begin to touch into that. So relaxing the body, allowing the body to soften. And relaxing the mind. Sometimes it can be interesting in the process of exploring relaxation. Sometimes we kind of do a scan. We'll check into the body, notice where there's tension held in the body. And we can consciously relax that tension sometimes when we notice it. But sometimes we can also just kind of scanning through the body, notice, oh, there's tension there. Kind of just let the awareness kind of take that spot in. And sometimes you'll find that it relaxes itself. But sometimes that's another way into the process of relaxation. It's letting the mindfulness kind of touch into those areas of tension and then seeing, can they release? Can they relax? Beginning with relaxation is a little bit of directing the attention at the beginning. I find it useful to sometimes do a body scan and just kind of check in. How is the body? Is the body relaxed? Where is there tension? But again, we're creating the conditions that will support the mind to more naturally just be available, to know that it's aware and to receive experience. So this is just the beginning of the practice. At times I found on retreat, I was on a 6-7 week retreat with Sayadaw, and partway through the retreat, I discovered, wow, there's a lot of tension, particularly mental tension, that seems to just always be there. And it seemed like the relaxation that I had settled with had kind of opened to my seeing that this was there, this kind of tension. And I spent, a whole sitting at one point just reminding myself, you know, kind of almost the request, may the body relax, may the mind relax, and just watching that unfold. At the end of that sitting, I was quite aware and very relaxed. This was a kind of an important piece for me to realize that relaxation does not mean that the mind has to be drifting. There can be a lot of alertness with relaxation. We'll probably mention relaxation a lot over the days. And then in terms of establishing mindfulness, establishing the kind of awareness that can help us to learn, to develop that wisdom. The first piece, I kind of covered it to root it in what the Buddha taught in the Eightfold Path, the view, the perspective that we're kind of operating from, the perspective that we're exploring experience from is wise view, which supports wise intention, the first two factors of the Eightfold Path. And we're cultivating the middle three factors of the Eightfold Path, the sila factors, the factors of ethical conduct through the practicing of the precepts, wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood. And then the last three factors of the path, the samadhi factors, wise effort, wise mindfulness, wise concentration, these are the factors that come into our meditation and into our practice of mindfulness in our daily lives. So I'll speak about each of these three, starting with mindfulness. What is awareness? You know, this simple quality of mindfulness. Maybe some working definitions for it to kind of get us in the ballpark. Just being aware, knowing what's happening while it's happening, being present. Do you know that you're hearing me right now? Are you aware that you're hearing right now? Were you consciously aware of that before I said that? If you notice a difference there, sometimes, you know, we can be hearing. And then, you know, just the mentioning of it. Are you aware that you're hearing? It creates or adds the kind of brightness in the mind. It's like, we really recognize that we're hearing. That's the quality of mindfulness, of awareness. Recognizing that we are aware. Recognizing that we're aware. This is a part of what really begins to support this style of practice. Because we're not grounding in an object of experience, an experience like the breath or something that we're continually coming back to. We are connecting to the awareness, knowing that we're aware. That's kind of the place where if we can begin to recognize that experience of awareness. Whether there's a lot of different experience happening or not, we can know that we're aware. Whether it's, you know, if the mind is kind of gravitating towards one thing, we can know we're aware of that. If there's a lot of changing things happening, we can know we're aware of that. I'm just beginning to recognize that, noticing that we're aware. And then what are we aware of? What's obvious? We don't have to direct the attention. This was a piece that early in my practice, I thought if I wasn't actively choosing what to pay attention to, it meant I wasn't being mindful. And that's a misunderstanding. The factor of attention, we can choose what to pay attention to. We can choose to pay attention to our hands or our feet or the sounds that are happening. We can aim the attention, but we can also settle back. Attention will pay attention to something, whether or not we actively choose that. So we can kind of relax that first piece, relax, and see what comes to us. See where the attention is naturally landing. This will be shaped, it will be affected by, it will be conditioned by what's happened before. So it's not random. It is unfolding lawfully where the attention lands. And often I would say, you know, what we really get to watch, what we really get to see in this practice often is the habits of our mind, the habits of what we've spent a lot of time doing. And so that's not a mistake when we see that. So this is the mindfulness piece, noticing that we're aware. And what is obvious? Letting go of the control of, I need to pick what I'm paying attention to. And then there's the effort piece, making effort. In some forms of practice where we're directing the attention to a particular object, that's the effort we make to come back to that experience. Here, we're not choosing a particular experience to land with. So our effort is more about remembering awareness. That was the first instruction Sayadaw gave me when I sat down with him. He said, the only work you need to give your mind is to remind yourself to be aware. Are you aware right now? Are you aware? Then what is obvious? It's not very hard to be aware for a moment. Right now, if I name some experiences, like notice your hands. Notice the contact where your hips are touching your sitting place. Notice a breath. How hard is that when I name those? Is it much work to try to connect with those experiences? Usually it's pretty light. It's just like it's already there almost as I name it. Oh, there's my hands. It's not like you're trying to dive in. You don't have to dive in and get close. Just what's obvious there. So just that light touch in a moment, that's enough. This moment of experience, what is it? The light touch. What's more challenging is keeping it going. We tend to have habits or patterns around holding on to experience, trying to stay with experience. And what we're encouraged to do here is to just keep reminding myself, aware? What's here? What's obvious? With that light touch of noticing, recognizing. Sometimes the experience, the object is a word we'll probably use from time to time. It means basically experience, what we are paying attention to, what awareness is knowing. Sometimes those experiences are kind of familiar. They're like the sensation of our hands, a kind of contact point or a sound or a breath. They're kind of the specific experiences that we're familiar with. as we move into just being curious about what's here, sometimes the experience or what is that what the mindfulness is connecting with is more of a broad kind of experience. The sense of just being here. That's okay. You don't have to find something specific. Sometimes we're not really sure what we're aware of. It's not clear, you know, how you know you're aware. Like if you're thinking of that question almost, it's like, aware? Am I aware? Then you are aware. You may not know how you know you're aware. That's okay. You don't have to know that. It will kind of almost become clear over time, just checking in. Am I aware? Yep. Okay, well, this is awareness. I don't know how to describe it, but this is awareness. And then what that awareness knows, again, sometimes it's clear. Sometimes it's a sound or a body sensation or a breath or a thought or an emotion. Sometimes it's clear and sometimes it's not clear. And at that point, you can again just check, well, am I aware? Okay, I'm aware. I don't know what the object is. I don't know what the experience is. That also doesn't mean that you're not being mindful. That's okay too. These are some things I've learned about this practice. You know, trying to, or thinking I wasn't being mindful if I didn't know what the object was. If you can know that you're aware, that's enough. So the effort that we make is just this moment-to-moment recognizing awareness and what's obvious. This continuity, the moment-to-moment exploration of that, the continuity of mindfulness over time, which develops as we practice. When we start, it's going to be, you know, we're aware for a few moments and then the mind will go off into thinking. Of course it will go off into thinking. And then at some point we'll recognize that we're aware again. I'll talk about that in just a moment. Very naturally, over the course of this practice, there will be times, will be moments where there's a little bit of momentum of the mindfulness, where it feels like you can kind of just ride the wave of the mindfulness. You don't have to remind yourself. You just know that you're aware. This is where the mindfulness begins to get established. Even for short little times, short moments, the mindfulness gets established a little bit. This is concentration. The continuity of mindfulness is a form of concentration. When we think about concentration, often we think about staying with one thing, the attention kind of landing with one thing for a long time. That's one form of concentration. The teachings, the Buddhist teachings, talk about other forms of concentration, a moment-to-moment concentration, where the attention, the mindfulness is stable over time, even though objects are changing, even though experience is dynamic. The mindfulness is stable and the mind is not getting pulled out of the present moment. That's also a form of concentration, and it can get very strong. The similar kinds of qualities that come with the one-pointed concentration, the delight, the joy, the ease, those things can happen with this moment-to-moment concentration. And often, initially at least, when we're getting familiar with this experience of moment-to-moment concentration, our attention is more kind of pulled to the experiences. And so we might be thinking, oh, there's a lot of unpleasantness, and this is not what I would think of as concentration. But that's possibly because of the focus on the object. And we can, the stability of mindfulness, we can begin to get familiar with that. That may have a quality of allowing, of spaciousness, of ease, So that's where concentration comes into this practice, just a stabilizing of mindfulness over time. And the mind will wander. It will not be stable for a lot of the time. Can reframe wandering mind a little bit, you know, when we think we're lost in thought. You know, that's actually just, it's not, we're not, we haven't gone anywhere. It's just mindfulness is not arising when the mind is lost in thought. So mindfulness goes away. We think without mindfulness, the mind's in its habits, its patterns, it's caught in its thoughts, its stories. At some point, mindfulness returns. So mindfulness arises again. In that moment, it's not like you've come back. I mean, mindfulness has arisen, but it's not like you've been anywhere or that you've come back from anywhere. It's just that your mindfulness is now arising in whatever has been happening here in your system. And so that moment of mindfulness returning, that's a really great moment. One of the greatest things about it is that we can really begin to get familiar with what it's like to be mindful in that moment, because there's a little bit of a contrast between mindfulness not being there in the moments before and mindfulness being there now. So that's a great place to begin to learn that flavor, that quality of, oh, this is awareness. Awareness is back. Awareness is back. What's that like? And in that moment, after the mind wandering, you know, the mind wandering, depending on how long it wanders for, the wandering mind, the mind that's lost in its habits, its patterns, its thoughts, that shapes our experience. When we're, you know, a thought arises about a friend, you know, somebody we maybe had a conversation with that was kind of charged. When mindfulness returns into that situation, likely you will be experiencing some of what those emotions were that the mind had wandered into. There's nothing to kind of get back to other than this here now. That's what's happening in this moment. So really useful to kind of check in. What has been the effect? So the mind has been wandering. The mind has been not mindful, but been doing something. Mindfulness returns. What's been the effect of that mind wandering? That's a really useful thing to do. Often there may be some tension that's crept in because of habits and patterns that you've gotten lost in. If tension has crept in, it can be really useful to then step back into the practice of relaxation. Acknowledge what's there. Yep, there's tension here. Some frustration that's connected to that. Okay. Explore a little relaxation again. That can be useful. Also useful to, as the practice strengthens, you can just simply recognize, oh, wow, there's frustration. Okay, that's what's here. And there's already kind of some relaxation that's holding that. But at the beginning, if you're newer to this practice, when the mind returns from being lost in thought and you see that there's some tension there, it can be useful to just, okay, let's do some relaxation again. Let's relax the body, relax the mind. Sometimes after the mind has been wandering, if the mind goes into what maybe is more of a drifty kind of thinking, a daydreamy kind of thinking, often the experience when the mindfulness returns into that is actually pleasant and relaxed. So that's also useful to know, to notice. You know, we don't have to fight with that. It's like, oh, wow, yeah, the mindfulness has returned and there's a lot of ease in the body and mind. Just take that in. Let yourself be aware of that. It's quite lovely. That was a great recognition for me, you know. It's like I get that way more often than I thought, actually, after the mind had returned. It was more relaxed than it was before the mind wandered. If I was curious about what was happening just as the mindfulness returned, sometimes I got that flavor. And no judgment about what's there. It's just what's here. That moment of mindfulness returning also points to how easeful the mindfulness can be. Because that moment when mindfulness returns, you did not do that. You had no control over that one. It just happened. So that moment, noticing that moment, mindfulness is back. And you didn't have to make any effort for that one. Receive that. That's a great moment. Sayadaw sometimes says that awareness alone is not enough. He's titled the book that. And what he means by that is that, as I said last night, mindfulness can be kind of joined up with many motivations. We can be really mindful. Somebody can be really aware of what's happening while they're robbing a bank. But the motivation is not to be curious about what it's like to be a human being in that situation. And so the noticing, you know, how we are paying attention, we start with this perspective of wise view. We cultivate that perspective, but the kind of the attitude in the mind can kind of habitually still be aiming towards holding on or wanting to get rid of. And so the next piece is to, from time to time, on occasion, to check how you are in relationship to what's happening. So the mind returns from wandering. There's the recognition, aware. There's the experience of what's here. And can be useful too in that moment to check the relationship. How am I right now in relationship to the experience? There's a relationship to what's happening, the sensations, the experience that we're having. And there may be an emotion, there may be a relationship to that. This is one flavor of attitude, and that kind of like the relationship to the experience that we're having. And there's four basic flavors of attitude. The attitude of wanting something to happen, greed. The attitude of wanting to get rid of something that's happening. The attitude of aversion. A kind of checked outness, a kind of spaciness, a sense of, you know, not really being connected, of confusion about what to do or something like that, related to delusion. Also related to delusion are views, ideas, beliefs about what should be happening. And then the fourth kind of wise attitude. The attitude of okayness, that what's happening is not a problem. It's okay. It's okay. That one, actually, we may not even notice that one sometimes. It can be a little bit hidden from us. And so it's useful from time to time to check, how am I in relationship to what's happening? You may not notice anything. And if that's the case, you could check and say, well, is it okay? You know, if there's nothing obvious there, is it okay? Does it feel okay? That's a beautiful thing to recognize, actually. Well, the mind is actually okay with what's happening. But if you don't recognize an attitude, you don't have to try to find it. This kind of using this kind of question of what's the relationship to experience? We're not trying to find the answer. It's more of an opening to what might be here. It's kind of like, is there anything else here that could be seen that is not like obvious, you know, not quite right in front of me. So this checking the attitude does begin to open us to things that aren't obvious, things that are a little behind the scenes. I think of it almost like, you know, at checking the attitude is almost like ringing a doorbell. You know, you're standing outside and you ring the doorbell. And then you just wait. You just keep practicing. Somebody may open the door, you know. And then there's a little bit more information. Like I mentioned yesterday, you know, there's maybe a pain in the knee and there's, you know, kind of trying to stay with it. And then, oh, well, what's the relationship? Well, I don't like it. Well, yeah, duh, I don't like it. Oh, but I didn't really notice that. That was actually why I was trying to pay attention. It wasn't known. Oh, there's unpleasant sensation in the knee and I don't like it. That's what's happening. That can be known. So with the checking the attitude, sometimes it's really obvious, the attitude. And if that's the case, if you notice a relationship, there's nothing much particular to do except to open and include that as that's something else that's here in experience. We'll talk a lot more about attitude as we go. There's a lot to say here. I'll just mention one more piece that another kind of attitude that we sometimes have is not so much about the what is happening of, you know, like, well, there's this body sensation or this emotion, but the attitude is sometimes more about the relationship we have to the meditation. Like, I don't think this should be happening because I'm meditating. Doesn't matter if it's pleasant or unpleasant. We have an idea about that. And so often, you know, sometimes our attitudes are more connected to the relationship to what's the meditation than it is connected to what the experience is. Now that's just useful to kind of be aware of that kind of attitude can happen. So those are the basic instructions. We remember our perspective of, we explore experience and to understand about our minds. We open to our experience not to try to change it or fix it, to hold on to it or get rid of it, but to learn and to learn what tends to take us to suffering and what tends to take us away from suffering. We explore cultivating a mindfulness that allows that learning, starting with relaxation, relax, recognize that you're aware. With some relaxation, there can be a very easeful, natural recognition. Oh, I'm aware. And then what's obvious? What's here? With a light touch, remembering to be aware. It's not hard to be aware. It happens very easily. The light touch of just remembering, moment after moment. Aware. What's obvious? Aware. What's obvious? And then from time to time, checking the relationship to experience. I would say really from time to time to start. Over time, it gets very natural to check the attitude as we no experience. It's almost like it will happen together. But at first, where you're practicing this opening to, it's useful, you know, maybe if you're sitting for 45 minutes, maybe, you know, every few minutes, check the attitude. Just remembering every now and then to check the attitude, check the relationship. So in a few minutes, we'll go out for walking. And this morning, most of this session has been with the instructions. This will not be the way most of these mornings will be. Most of these mornings will be a briefer instruction, a guided sitting, and time for questions at the end. Today, there's just more kind of framing of the instructions. But this morning, since we didn't really have time for a guided meditation, today we'll be offering two periods where we will be in the hall offering guided meditations. So we'll be back at 10:15 in the hall, sitting up here. So whoever is the 10:15 bell ringer, please do ring the bell, but you don't have to be the practice leader today. And we'll do the same thing at 1:45 this afternoon. We'll have a guided meditation because I know that there's some people in the kitchen this morning and won't be able to attend the morning one. So we'll do one in the afternoon as well. So we'll offer a guided meditation for kind of orienting to the practice in the sitting form. And in a few minutes, you're going to go out and try practicing in walking. The instructions for walking are just the same. They are no different. This is actually one of the great things about this style of practice. The instructions don't change whatever you're doing. Whether you're doing your yogi jobs, you can notice you're aware and what's obvious. Different things will be happening. You're chopping carrots. I mean, you're probably aware of seeing and, you know, pressure of the knife and aware of the context in the kitchen. There's a lot that we're aware of. So the objects change in our walking than they are in our sitting. In our walking, often there's more visual stimulation because we have our eyes open. But the instructions stay the same. So start. Really helpful to start with relaxation. First, I'll offer what Sayadaw said at one point in one of my interviews with him. One of the yogis was asking Sayadaw, you know, well, how do you practice walking meditation? And Sayadaw's response was really telling. He said, I don't practice walking meditation. I practice awareness while walking. So that, again, it's like there's not a specific technique. We cultivate this capacity to be aware and notice what happens. You know, notice what awareness receives while we're walking. There's a lot going on there. And again, relaxation can help create that condition so that we can practice awareness while walking. So it's useful, I'd say, when you start. And what I'd encourage, actually, you know, you don't have to do the back and forth walking. I was doing back and forth walking at Shui U Min when I first got there, and Sayadaw would stand there. He looked at me. And then he asked me later in one of my interviews, he said, I'm just asking myself, where is she going? He said, you don't have to do that. Just walk and be aware. So I encourage you to just like walk. You know, you can walk on the trails. You can walk, you know, around the island. Just walk and be aware. Notice what you are aware of. So when you start walking, a good way to explore relaxation while walking is to find a pace that feels comfortable. Just what pace feels easeful, because there's kind of a pace in movement. When we're aware in movement, there's a pace where the mindfulness can kind of naturally kind of hook up with the movement. So you could try going a little faster, a little slower, and see where it feels comfortable. Where does the mindfulness kind of go, oh yeah, whew, I can be with this. Sometimes it's faster, sometimes it's slower. Just notice what feels easeful. So ease, let ease be your guide at the beginning of the walking. And then notice, are you aware? And what is obvious? There will probably be quite a bit of seeing and hearing happening. I think in other forms of walking practice, we often focus on the body, on the feet, attending more to physical sensations of the walking. And so we're not, we often restrict our gaze, we look down, we're kind of doing sense restraint in our eyes. We wouldn't necessarily attend to sound. Here we're just walking and noticing what happens. So there will be physical sensations in the body that might be obvious sometimes. But quite often, especially early on, you know, there's going to be a lot of seeing and hearing happening. So notice that. Seeing is what's obvious. See and know that you're seeing. Right now, do you know that you're seeing? If your eyes are closed, you might not. You might be more in the hearing terrain. So do you know you're hearing? But what is that? Just that simple, like, know that you're seeing, know that you're hearing. There's a useful distinction that happens, that will happen when you're walking, that is useful to point out or highlight as a place to be curious. So while you're walking, sometimes you'll just be kind of seeing, not particularly looking at anything, but just a kind of a broad sense of seeing. And then something will happen. Maybe a bird will fly across your path, or the cat will come out from behind a bush, or you'll walk and there'll be a burst of color on a plant. There'll be something that the attention is drawn to, and you will look at it. You don't have to not look, but notice that difference between seeing is kind of more the general experience of seeing and looking at something. This is the factor of attention in the mind. The mind has been drawn to something. It's like, that's useful to know. So be aware of that, the shift from seeing to looking. Or when the mind lets go of the looking and returns to seeing. There's something analogous in hearing. There's, you know, the kind of general knowing the ambient sound. And then, you know, maybe you hear the woodpecker. You're listening to the woodpecker. So the difference between hearing and listening, is you might notice that. And then you might begin to notice kind of a shift, you know, from looking to hearing, to listening. So this is beginning to kind of get you interested in this factor of attention that shifts from experience to experience. When we don't notice the attention shifting, I would say that is probably some good percentage, at least 90% of the time our mind wanders because we haven't noticed the attention was drawn to something. So if you can get familiar with that experience of what is it like? Oh, orienting to something new, a new sound, a new sight. Curiosity about that. You don't have to not have that happen, but get familiar with it. Walking is such a great place to explore this and experiment with it. We can also begin to be curious about what, you know, what the emotions are. While we're walking, there can be a lot of, you know, delight and joy that can come when we see something beautiful. There can be, you know, there can also be aversion if there's something happening that is painful to see. You know, if you happen to see a lizard eat a moth, you know, that might affect you. So be aware of all of it. Again, not trying to direct the attention. It's very broad. The whole, taking in the whole thing. And then noticing where the attention goes to, where it shifts to. So we have the time for walking now. It's 9:30, just about 9:30, not quite. And then we'll come back and have the guided meditation at 10:15 and 1:45. This afternoon at the Dhamma offering, we'll take questions. So practice with this for the day until 4, and then we'll have an opportunity for questions at that point. Enjoy your day of practice.